Baseball Weekly is on the air.
Robin shotgun. Cobb takes the snap. Back to pass in trouble and gets rid of it. Near side caught by the hype into the 50. Near side of the 40. Stephen Collins in the 30. Cuts it back to the 20. Stephen Collins, 15. Breaks the tackle. Pass by. Cardinals win. Stephen Collins. Touchdown.
Second and two from the 33. Brees rolls to his right. Stops. Throws deep down the middle. He's got Meacham at the 35. Down to the 30. He's at the 25 to 20. Cuts inside right and back to the near sideline. He will score. A serpentine route to the end zone for Robert Meacham. Covers 67 yards.
Hi, this is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, Giants and Cowboys go at it in Big D, and can the Raiders spoil perfection in Green Bay?
Do Andy Reid, Norv Turner, Raheem Morris, and Tony Sperano have futures at all in Philadelphia, San Diego, Tampa Bay, or Miami?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, this is Wayne Larrabee. The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. We're into week 14 of the season, and we start off with associate editor Eli Cabron. Eli, out in San Diego, Chargers situation. It apparently is not a matter of if Norv Turner will save his job or not. It apparently is more than that. A.J. Smith, the man above him, the general manager, may not stay as well.
Yeah, we hear Turner's all but out in San Diego unless the team somehow makes the playoffs, which seems like a long shot at this point. A.J. Smith, the man in charge, is kind of a polarizing figure, kind of a tough-nosed person that a lot of people, established coaches, may not want to work with. We hear guys like Jeff Fisher and Bill Cowher are unlikely to come if A.J. Smith sticks around.
Well, you know, it's interesting. San Diego winning out, if they got to 9-7, 9-7 is going to win that division. They would get some tiebreakers, but we've seen nothing from the Chargers to suggest that they could win out. So let's assume that Norv is in trouble. You know, the real issue there, I think, is if A.J. Smith isn't out, he's probably going to hire the next head coach, and that in itself would mitigate against big names like Fisher and Cowher.
Yeah, that's very true, Hub, because guys like Fisher and Cowher, they want some say in the pro personnel and the decision-making of the roster, and A.J. Smith doesn't seem to be willing to give that up. They'll likely go with a defensive coach, we hear, just the opposite of Norv Turner, maybe a tougher coach than Norv. But unless A.J. is willing to give up some of that say in molding the roster, it's going to be tough to get a big-name coach in there.
Eli, thank you very much. Senior editor Eric Edholm is with us. Another coaching situation, and maybe it has a tie to San Diego eventually. All this talk about will Andy Reid be fired. Let me ask you this, Eric. Is there a real possibility Andy Reid doesn't want to go back to Philadelphia next year?
Like you said, I think everyone in Philadelphia is you know, debating his future there. But you know, Andy Reid would be welcomed in a lot of NFL cities. I mean, his reputation is very strong league-wide. He's considered an excellent head football coach. He's also somebody who would demand some sort of personnel control like he has in Philadelphia. So, you know, look, I mean, if you start connecting the dots a little bit, Reed's a West Coast guy. He could work with Phillip Rivers in his prime. I mean, it would be a situation that you'd have to think about Reed possibly leaving on his own without, you know, having to wait for a management decision in Philadelphia.
You know, I think the only thing that you wonder about there, Eric, is that if he was to leave, if he was done in Philly after 13 years, like so many guys, don't you think maybe a year or two off before he jumped right back in?
No question. There's been speculation about that in the past after a couple tough seasons in Philly. You know, he's never had his mission as a Mormon. He's never done his 2-year service. There have been people who said he plans to do it at some point. That's a possibility. So I still think he's going to be back in Philadelphia. I still think management wants him back. I think they want to give him another chance to mold this roster and keep coaching this team. But the possibility exists that he won't be.
Meanwhile, in lieu of Jason Garrett's situation down in Texas where he iced his own kicker last week and eventually lost the ball game, this is kind of tip of the iceberg with him, isn't it, Eric? I mean, there's been a lot of questioning of Jason Garrett's end-of-game management tactics, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, I mean, first came in New England, the game that, you know, they outplayed the Patriots for much of the contest, probably 58 minutes worth, but leaving that much time on the clock for Tom Brady to kind of steal a victory really irked Jerry Jones, the owner. You know, he sounded off and held court in the locker room after the game. It was the first sign of maybe a fracture between the two. Things have been okay since, but Sunday's loss against the Cardinals is a real head-scratcher. You know, Tony Romo throws a middle-of-the-field completion with 20-plus seconds on the clock. You know, that situation with two timeouts in your pocket, you call timeout and then you reassess your situation. Instead of leaving a rookie kicker as good as he's been with a 48-yard attempt, that just seemed to be the problem to me, not the icing of the kicker. With 6 seconds left in the play clock, I guess I understand if your guys aren't set up properly, if you think you're not going to, you know, if you're going to have a false start, maybe you do burn a timeout there. That's fine. But not using one earlier seems a little bit of a mistake.
You know, you wonder about this Cowboys team. You know, could there be a concern about trusting Tony Romo? You look at areas where, best case, there's no depth and maybe even the starters aren't all that good. And you even look at the wins. You know, they got the win, what was it, week two in overtime against San Francisco. That's it as far as winning football teams. So, you know, even though they're leading the NFC East, you just continue to wonder, is this team for real or are they just another one of these 500 clubs that's had a healthy schedule so far?
Yeah, I think it says something that most people seem to be on the side of the Giants, a 6-6 team that's lost four in a row. Yes, they played well against the Packers. I think a lot of people think New York can march into Dallas and get a victory, and even up the NFC East, get those records back to 7-6 apiece. But you're right on Romo, too. I mean, his numbers are pretty good in the fourth quarter. They are good in the two-minute situation at the end of halves, but those couple of turnovers early in the season, you have to wonder whether Garrett factored that into his equation when he didn't call that timeout.
Eric, thank you very much. Senior editor Eric Edholm. We'll be back with more Way We Hear It when Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. We welcome in associate editor Kevin Fishbane. Kevin, one of your teams, the Miami Dolphins, what do they lose? 7 games in a row out of the gate this season, and yet they have kind of turned things around now, and they've done it pretty much with defense, haven't they?
Yeah, and the defense was the most underachieving unit on this team to start the season, Wayne, and we thought heading into the season, Mike Nolan's unit would be the reason that Miami could maybe kind of surprise people, but they just completely underachieved. Now they're turning things around. It really helped getting Carlos Dansby healthy in the middle of that defense, and having Vontae Davis healthy also at cornerback allows them to play a little more aggressive in that defense, and their run defense has been fantastic. I mean, they held the Raiders to 48 rushing yards last week. The defense really has been the kind of catalyst to this turnaround.
Yeah. Now, Kevin, we talked a little bit about this off the air, but Matt Moore was a young kid who played very well towards the end of his first year in Carolina. They didn't believe in him. He also is the difference in this winning streak, and you know, he's not reminding anybody of Tom Brady, but he's played very solid football. He takes care of the football, and yet apparently isn't viewed as part of the future of the Dolphins either.
Yeah, no, and you know, he has been efficient, and one of the problems coming in was his accuracy. He's been pretty accurate. He hasn't thrown many interceptions during this kind of turnaround, and he's been getting Brandon Marshall the ball deep, which was something Chad Henne had a problem doing. But this team is very set on drafting the quarterback of their future in April, and the more they win, the harder it's going to be to get into that maybe top five, top seven picks, whatever you need to do to get a Matt Barkley, for example, which has been a name tied to Miami. But, you know, Moore will probably stick around and they'll have to, you know, they're going to want some kind of veteran there for competition. But the idea is that whoever they draft in April is going to be the starting quarterback, regardless of what Matt Moore has done this season.
Kevin, great job. Let's bring in associate editor Arthur Arkush. Arthur, it wouldn't be a Way We Hear It segment if we didn't talk about the Colts and their latest situation. Are they going to draft Andrew Luck? Are they going to trade Peyton Manning? What are they going to do? Archie Manning weighed in on it, Peyton's dad, this week. But apparently the quarterback himself appears to be unhappy with the GM for something that Bill Polian said on his radio show.
That's right. There does appear to be a rift between Peyton and the front office. Bill Polian went on his radio show and told his listeners that him and Peyton had discussed the possibility of the Colts drafting Andrew Luck and you know, Luck waiting in the wings while Peyton was ready. Well, Peyton said, not so fast. That's not something that we've discussed. And further, anything we do discuss is between me and Bill Polian. And you could tell that he was clearly annoyed by the fact that that was made public. So they've got a situation on their hands. There's no question. Archie Manning, of course, earlier this week made waves by saying on the radio that he didn't think that his son and Andrew Luck could coexist. And then, of course, 24 hours later, backtracked on that statement. So it's kind of unclear where things stand right now, quite frankly.
Yeah, Arthur, it's interesting, though, according to my sources, and I'm not comparing sources, but what I've been told is that they absolutely are bringing Peyton Manning back, and they absolutely are drafting Andrew Luck, and the rest of this is just working it all out. What's really intriguing is Archie did make the statement. He did moonwalk 180 degrees in 24 hours and turn around, and you almost wonder, now I have no knowledge of this, but you almost wonder if Polian didn't put a call into him and say, hey, you know, watch where you're going here. The bottom line, though, is everything I'm hearing is that they're going to have both of them for a year, maybe two, and you have to wonder, why is Peyton so resistant to that? Nobody's throwing him under the bus, but they've got to think about their future after Peyton Manning, good neck or bad.
Absolutely, and you have to take into consideration, of course, the fact of the new CBA and the whole timing and how they can really afford now to keep both quarterbacks on the roster. So, again, it's an interesting situation, but, of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that Archie Manning has, of course, pulled a power play in the past with his other son in the whole San Diego situation. So I don't know that it should be entirely ruled out that something like that could happen again. He is a close friend of Oliver Luck, so I think that that's at least in consideration.
It's at least worth watching. You're right. Thank you, Arthur. Associate Editor Dan Parr is with us. Dan down in Tampa Bay. Raheem Morris trying to snap that losing streak. He's going to some great lengths, isn't he?
Absolutely, Wayne. It's desperate times, and he's certainly resorting to some desperate measures. He ejected one of his own players, Brian Price, a guy who really the Bucks view as part of the solution and not the problem, from a game in Week 13 after he committed a costly unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. This is a problem that's been going on with the Bucks. There, you have 780 yards and penalty yards, one of the league leaders in that category, and Raheem has been emphasizing in recent weeks the need to cut down on those things, so he snapped when that happened, and so now he's done that. He's ejected a player from his own team, and he's also gone ahead and trimmed down the defensive playbook, which is a little bit peculiar to be doing at this point of the season. Why wasn't that done earlier if that was part of the problem, and what does that say about his players right now if they can't get that playbook down?
Well, here's the real curiosity to me, Dan. As you look at Raheem Morris, he really struggled just to win a game or two his first year as the youngest coach, I believe, ever in the NFL. And people wondered, what were the Bucks thinking? A lot of people said the Bucks front office was wondering the same thing. Then the surprise 10-6 last year really should have been in the playoffs, lost a tiebreaker to the Packers, interestingly enough. But you look at those 10 wins, a lot of them last second over bad teams. Now they're struggling again. And it really is fair to question what Raheem Morris brings to the table as a head coach if, in fact, he can't at least control his players.
I don't think anybody's surprised that the Bucks are not taking off and winning, you know, in the competition to be a double-digit winning team this year. I think a lot of people expected them to take that step back. The fact that they've lost six in a row, though, and the teams they're losing to, the Panthers are a team they're supposed to be ahead of right now in their development, and they just lost to them. Got a game up against the Jaguars that has really turned into a must-win for Tampa Bay. Where do they go from there if they can't beat the Jaguars, who just fired their head coach recently? So Raheem Morris certainly has put himself in a position where he's going to be dealing with questions about his job security the rest of the year.
Associate Editor Dan Parr on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Stay tuned. The games are up next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkush. In the NFL this weekend, the Steelers and Browns got the weekend started with an AFC North matchup on Thursday night. And as usual, we focus on the Sunday and Monday night games here on Pro Football Weekly. The winless Indianapolis Colts put some numbers on the board in New England in a 31-24 loss last week. You know, they outgained the Pats 437 yards to 366. Dan Orlovsky was terrific. 30 of 37, 353 yards, two touchdowns, one interception. This week, the Colts travel back from where they came, Baltimore, for a matchup with the AFC North Division leading Ravens. Last week in the rain at Cleveland, the Ravens made like a typical Big Ten team and ran the ball 55 times. Ray Rice gained a career-high 204 yards on 29 carries. Ravens are middle of the pack in rushing stats, but they figured to move up. Last week, they did some damage against the 31st rush defense in the league. This week, they faced the 30th-ranked run defense in the Indianapolis Colts. Meanwhile, the Minnesota Vikings head to Detroit to take on the troubled Lions this Sunday. Detroit's lost two in a row.
to two of the best teams in the NFC, the Packers and Saints. The Vikings have lost four straight since coming off their bye week. The Vikings got their offense on track in that loss to Denver last week. Rookie quarterback Christian Ponder threw for a Viking rookie record 381 yards and three touchdowns, but he lost a fumble and threw a couple of picks. Percy Harvin, his main target, eight catches, 156 yards, and touchdowns of 52 and 48 yards. The Lions are having problems controlling their emotions. In the last two losses, they've committed 22 penalties for 189 yards. Now, that's Raider-like. In their first meeting of the season, September 25th, the Lions overcame a 20-point first-half deficit to win 26-23 in overtime in the Metrodome. Check the status for Adrian Peterson, the great Vikings running back who missed last week with a high ankle sprain, and even quarterback Christian Ponder was banged up last week and is somewhat questionable for this week's ball game. Huh?
Wayne, I've got an interesting one with Tampa Bay going to Jacksonville. Now, Jacksonville is actually the number four-ranked defense in the NFL. The Bucs are 31st in defense, so that tells you a little bit about what's going on here, but Jacksonville has lost their top three cornerbacks in the last few weeks. You've got two of the most promising young quarterbacks in the NFL in this game, but Josh Freeman has taken three giant steps backward, and Blaine Gabbert has really struggled as a rookie. Tampa Bay has lost six straight games right now, and they've been outscored 81-27 in the first quarter this season, so the Jags are going to try and start hot. The good thing for the Bucs has been LeGarrette Blount. He had had back-to-back 100-yard games until last week when he was held to just 19 yards on 11 carries. Mel Tucker, an interim head coach, his players playing for him. He wants that job. The big question in Tampa, as we just discussed in the way we hear it, are the young Bucs playing for Raheem Morris? This is a huge game for Morris in terms of him trying to protect that job. Also got the Philadelphia Eagles going down to play the Miami Dolphins. Now, the Dolphins' arrow pointing straight up, Eagles pointing straight down, even though they're at the same place in the standings, which is playing for next year. The Dolphins have been the best run defense in the NFL over the last 5 weeks since they started winning, and they held the Raiders to just 46 yards last week. The Raiders, number one running team in the league, LeSean McCoy is the number one running back in the league for the Eagles. He could have a tough time with this defense of the Miami Dolphins this week. You know, Philadelphia, on defense, they've allowed 11 passing plays of 40 yards or more. Can Matt Moore take advantage of that for the Dolphins? That has not been Miami's game. This is going to come down to can the Dolphins' run defense, which has been so good in recent weeks, stop LeSean McCoy, and can Matt Moore make just enough plays to win for the Dolphins without turning the ball over to the Eagles, Wayne?
Well, Hub, the NFC West champion San Francisco 49ers are in Arizona to face the Cardinals, winners of four of their last five, the latest being an upset of the Cowboys in overtime last week. Kevin Cobb hit LaRod Stevens Howling on a dramatic 52-yard score in overtime to win it. The defense will have a lot to say about this one. Niners rank fourth in yardage and first in points allowed. Cardinals have allowed just five touchdowns in the past five games. And by the way, they sacked Tony Romo five times last week. San Francisco outgained Arizona 431-229 in a 23-7 victory over Big Red in Week 11. Cardinals committed five turnovers, three interceptions, two fumbles in that game. But the 10-2 Niners would be wise not to overlook the 5-7 Cardinals if they hope to stay alive in the race for best record and ultimate postseason home field advantage in the NFC playoffs. The Seattle Seahawks are 5-7, but coming in off a 31-14 victory over the Eagles and have had a few extra days to off as they prepare for the Rams, who are undermanned at 2-10. St. Louis has lost four of its last five games, managing only 157 yards of offense in that loss to San Francisco last week. A.J. Feely started at quarterback in place of the injured Sam Bradford, who was down due to an ankle injury. Check his status for this week. Seahawks have won three of their last four, including a 24-7 victory over the Rams in St. Louis November 20th. Marshawn Lynch has rushed for more than 100 yards in four of the past five games. The Seahawks have won their last six home games against the Rams, outscoring them 114-25 in the last four hookups between these two franchises in Seattle, huh?
Wayne, the Buffalo Bills go to San Diego in a matchup of two of the most inconsistent teams in the NFL. The Chargers got over their usual early season woes, racing out to a 4-1 start, and then dropped six straight prior to finally beating Jacksonville last Monday night at 5-7, still very much alive in the AFC West if they can win out. Now, the Buffalo Bills shocked everybody getting out to a 5-2 start, but they have dropped their last five and are pretty much out of the wild card hunt, and they've got to make that dreaded coast-to-coast trip. The Bills, they've allowed 187 yards rushing last week. Can San Diego take advantage of that? Ryan Matthews has been a bit of a disappointment, but Phillip Rivers finally stayed pick-free last Monday night, and if he gets hot, you got to figure this one could be all San Diego as the Bills are playing out the string. We also have the Atlanta Falcons going to Carolina in a must-win for the Atlanta Falcons. All of the wild card hopefuls in the NFC lost last week, including Atlanta, who came up short on a desperation last-minute pass to the end zone against the Houston Texans. Carolina playing pretty good football. Statistically, they're not very impressive, and their real problem is they're 29th in points allowed. We know Atlanta can score points in bunches, but the key to this football game, Wayne, the Atlanta Falcons are not the same team on the road as they are at home. Carolina's been pretty tough in Charlotte this year, and this one is at Carolina. Can the Falcons stay in the thick of the wild card race? They need a win here to make that happen.
All right, Hub, stay tuned. We've got the big games coming up next. You're listening to Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
This is Wayne Larrabee with Hub Arkish in some of the top games on this weekend's NFL card. The New York Jets continue their playoff run as they host the Kansas City Chiefs. Jets have won two in a row, while the Chiefs come in off a 10-3 victory over the Bears in Chicago last week. Now, Hub, the Jets have been getting by with essentially one good quarter of football a game. I mean, they had to rally from behind against both Buffalo and last week at Washington to get victories. The Chiefs, well, they held the Bears to 0 for 11 on third down conversions. That was a big key to holding the Bears to 3 points.
You know, Wayne, it's interesting. In Denver, they call it a miracle. In New York, they call it a problem. And so, you know, you're right. They're not playing good football for three quarters. But then we talk about the problem again, and I would ask you, is Mark Sanchez the problem, or is he the answer? At this stage of his development, he should be better at quarterback. They get no consistent play from him. The running game has bounced back a little bit in the last couple weeks after it struggled early. And controversially, they've just extended the contract of offensive coordinator Brian Schottenheimer. I don't think the Chiefs can go on the road in back-to-back weeks and beat playoff-caliber teams. And the Jets are a lot healthier than the Bears were. So this is a really tough spot for Kansas City.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with you, Hub. Meanwhile, the Oakland Raiders, co-leaders in the AFC West, head to Green Bay, where they face the NFC North Division leading unbeaten Packers. Greg Matzik has the story.
The Green Bay Packers and Oakland Raiders head into their Sunday afternoon matchup in similar yet different positions. The undefeated Packers have locked up the NFC North and have their sights set on securing a first-round bye in the playoffs. Meanwhile, the 7-5 Raiders are tied atop the AFC West with the Denver Broncos, and while Sunday's game is not a must-win, it certainly would go a long way in boosting the confidence of a team that has been decimated by injuries to skill position players. Running back Darren McFadden has missed 5 games with a foot injury, while wide receivers Jacoby Ford and Denarius Moore have missed 3 and 2 games respectively. In order to disrupt the Packers' run at perfection, Raiders quarterback Carson Palmer will need as many weapons at his disposal as possible on the semi-frozen ground at Lambeau Field.
They got a bullseye on their back, being unbeaten. It just shows you how good they are to stay undefeated for that long, because everybody wants to be the team to knock them off, and nobody's done it. You got to keep the ball out of Aaron's hands and keep those receivers off the field.
Speaking of Rodgers, all he's doing is posting perhaps the best overall season a quarterback has ever played in the NFL. He leads the league with 37 touchdowns, is on pace to reach 5,000 yards passing with a completion percentage of over 70%, and has an average quarterback rating of over 125. Are you serious? That doesn't bode well for the Raiders, who rank 27th in the league in scoring defense. Now, speaking of defense, the Packers have a Jekyll and Hyde thing going on right now. They rank 31st in total defense, but lead the league with 23 interceptions. That means more opportunities for Rodgers and the electric Packers offense to take the field.
I believe the two worst defenses, if you will, as far as yardage, are the Patriots and us. And I think we're both doing pretty well this year. So I love our defense. They get the ball back. I think we're leading the league in takeaways, so I don't mind how they're playing. I know they want to improve a little bit and not maybe give up that many points, but they're doing a great job for us.
One team is pursuing perfection. The other is hoping to remain relevant in the AFC playoff picture. Plenty on the line to play for on a cold winter's day at Lambeau Field. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Greg Matzik.
You know, Wayne, I think I mentioned this last week. There's no question who the better team is here. But as you look at the possibility of 16-0, a lot of people have pretty much boiled it down to that game against the Bears week 15 or the 15th game of the season, assuming it means something. I have felt all along that this is the danger spot on the schedule for the Packers. Just a funny feeling, but let's keep an eye on this one as Oakland must bounce back from getting upset in Miami last week.
Hub, I said it several weeks ago that the two games that would tell the story for the Packers would be the game in the Meadowlands against the Giants and this one right here. If the Raiders were a little bit healthier, if they had some of those playmakers, especially McFadden back, they'd be a much stronger team coming into Green Bay. But nonetheless, this is a danger spot for the Packers, no doubt about it. The Bears, coming in off an ugly 10-3 loss to Kansas City, are in Denver this week, where it's always Tebow time. The Bears still very much alive in the NFC wildcard race, while the Broncos are in a race with the Raiders atop the AFC West, Hub.
Well, and here's the thing about the Tim Tebow era, if you will, Wayne. When you take a little closer look at it, in the six games, they've scored more than 18 points twice. Once was in Oakland, where they turned the ball over. The Raiders turned the ball over six times. And then last week at Minnesota, where the Vikings are one of the poorest teams in the NFL. Other than that, they've scored 10, 17, 17, 18, 16. Normally, that's the magic number in the NFL, where if a defense can hold you to that, they win games. You look at the teams they've played. Tim Tebow has not seen a defense like the Chicago Bears. He has not seen bigs like Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs and Julius Peppers and even their three techniques, Moby Okoye and Henry Melton, who run like these guys do. If ever there was a bad matchup for Tim Tebow, I think this is it. Now, I don't know how the Bears are going to score points. They may have to do that on defense, but I'm telling you, this is a bad spot for Tim Tebow and the Denver Broncos against a desperate Chicago Bears team.
All right, Hub, stay tuned. We'll have analysis of more top games from week 14 of this NFL campaign coming up after these messages on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. We resume with our preview of the top games, week 14 NFL season. The New England Patriots offense provides quite a challenge for the Washington Redskins' solid defense, but that New England defense may be just what the doctor ordered for the struggling Washington offense. Patriots and Skins, Hub, do battle outside our nation's capital this weekend.
Yeah, and you might think that Washington would be licking his chops at this Patriots defense, but this week another big blow as their left tackle Trent Williams and arguably their most productive player, tight end Fred Davis, both begin their four-game suspensions for testing positive for illegal substances, and the way this report came out suggested these were more of the recreational variety than necessarily performance-enhancing drugs. Whatever they were, it's been a real punch in the gut to the Redskins. Mike Shanahan very upset. Some of their teammates very upset. And these are, as I say, it's Rex Grossman's personal protector and his favorite target. So I don't see the Redskins getting much done against this New England defense. The Patriots, on the other hand, nobody matches up with Rob Gronkowski. Nobody matches up with Tom Brady. The Redskins will be proud. The game is at home. But in the end, it's hard to see the Patriots stubbing their toe here.
The AFC South Division leading Houston Texans are in Cincinnati, where the wild card contending Bengals reside. Anson Ainsworth has more.
Two rookie quarterbacks will go head-to-head on Sunday as the 7-5 Cincinnati Bengals play host to the 9-3 Houston Texans at Paul Brown Stadium. The Texans' rookie signal caller T.J. Yates looks to get his second career victory and a spot in the playoffs for the first time in team history. However, head coach Gary Kubiak just wants his team to worry about winning this week.
Let's worry about winning the next game, and our guys know that. We were sluggish today in practice early. It took us a while to get going, and we can't be sluggish when we go there. We're going to have to practice better tomorrow, but they understand what's going on.
Houston has battled injuries all season, and this week will be no different. The Texans may have to play without all-pro wide receiver Andre Johnson, who injured his hamstring in last week's win over the Falcons and is listed as a game-time decision. Head coach Gary Kubiak says they will know later in the week if Johnson will be able to play.
I feel very fortunate. I know we're going to get Andre back. The key right here now is that when we get him back, we need to make sure we get him back for the long haul. So, hopefully we can get him back here real quick. But like I said, until he gets back out here, we'll have to wait and see.
Meanwhile, the Bengals and their rookie quarterback Andy Dalton look to get back on track, having lost three of their last four games and are coming off a 35-7 loss at Pittsburgh. Head coach Marvin Lewis knows that his sixth-ranked rushing defense will have his hands full with Houston's running attack led by Arian Foster.
He is a guy that does a great job, great vision, and plays through their scheme very well, and he makes the cut and then has speed to go to distance if you're not in the right leverage. So he's a fine runner.
Former Bengal cornerback Jonathan Joseph will get a chance to play against his old team for the first time, and head coach Marvin Lewis says that he's playing well this season.
I think he's, you know, he's playing with a lot of confidence. That's not really a change, but, I mean, you know, just observing him on film this year, you know, he's playing with the confidence, and he's really, you know, kind of playing to his potential. He's doing a good job.
Marvin Lewis has had success in December at home, leading his team to a 12-5 record, while also winning 8 of their last 9. Houston trails Cincinnati 3-2 in the all-time series, but has won the last 2 meetings between the two teams, including a 28-17 win at Cincinnati in 2009. Anson Ainsworth, Pro Football Weekly.
Thank you very much, Anson. Meanwhile, the red-hot New Orleans Saints travel to Tennessee, where the 7-5 Titans await. We get more in this report from Gus Kattengill.
It's the 9-3 Saints taking on the 7-5 Tennessee Titans, and yet another game for the black and gold, in which they're facing a team battling for a playoff spot or positioning. Remember the Saints' last 3 games, Atlanta, Giants, and the Lions. An interesting sidebar to this game, the Saints will be playing outside for the first time in a long time. Saints head coach Sean Payton.
It's really the first time we've been outside on the road in quite a while. If you go back, it really would be Tampa Bay, which is 7 weeks, would be 8 weeks come this weekend.
It's also the last outside game they'll play for the rest of the season. Saints will be at Minnesota next week, then close out in the Superdome hosting Atlanta and Carolina. On to the game. The Saints and their fans remember Titans quarterback Matt Hasselbeck, all right. Playoffs last season, wild card round. Hasselbeck, then with the Seattle Seahawks, threw for 272 yards and 4 touchdowns against the Saints defense.
You know what a guy like that is capable of.
Saints quarterback Drew Brees with more on the Titans.
They're a mix of veterans and then some really young, talented players. And you just see him playing very aggressively. You see him swarming to the football. You know, they do some things that are a little bit different. You know, being an AFC team, you know, you're only playing once every 4 years. So it's not like you see him all the time. So there's a little extra preparation that goes into that. You know, I know that they're right in the hunt in the AFC in the playoff picture. So we're both playing for a lot.
As for the Saints, they can clinch a playoff spot with a win and a Bears or Lions loss Sunday. The Saints can win the NFC South with a victory and a Falcons loss. Bree says all of that comes if they focus on Sunday and win the game.
You know, I think we've been so just locked in and focused. You know, the opportunity with a win and we could win the division. I mean, hey, that's one of the first steps into, you know, in achieving, you know, the goals that you have set, you know, for yourself during the season. So seems like they're playing some of their best football. I like to think we're playing some of ours, and so this should be a great game.
In New Orleans, Gus Kattengill for Pro Football Weekly.
Thank you very much, Gus. Stay tuned. The headliner on Pro Football Weekly is up next. Headliner, an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. One of the great rivalries out of the NFC East shapes up on 2 of the final 4 weeks of the regular season, and the first of those meetings is this week. The New York Giants travel to Dallas to take on the Cowboys. Our headliner is previewed by Russell Scott.
The division's likely to come down to the Cowboys and Giants, who play twice over the next 4 weeks. Interesting, because Dallas practically gave away a game Sunday in Arizona, and the Giants have lost 4 in a row. Cowboys coach Jason Garrett trying to put aside all the talk about clock and timeout mismanagement from last week's overtime loss. And this week, owner Jerry Jones said he would not second-guess his coach over those decisions. Meanwhile, Tom Coughlin says he feels like his team was brought closer together by the fight they put up in that 3-point loss to the Packers. The Cowboys secondary, which has struggled lately, allowing a 100-yard receiver in 3 straight games, has another challenge this week, dealing with Victor Cruz, who has gone over 1,000 yards already. Cruz has 3 straight 100-yard games receiving, and Eli Manning says he works at it.
Got a good level head, and you know, he's not afraid to be coached and to learn and make adjustments, and so he's in tune to, you know, being hard on himself and watching what he needs to improve on and asking questions, and those are guys you want.
The Cowboys should have their top receiver back. Miles Austin is practicing again after missing 4 games with a hamstring. The good news for Dallas is that after disappearing late in games earlier this season, Dez Bryant has started to come to life. Jason Garrett says he's seen the improvement.
If you go through his repertoire of routes, I think we've seen improvement in all those areas. He's always been somebody who can go and get the football. And I think when he gets better at releasing and gets better at running the individual routes, he's going to be a difficult guy to cover.
The game matches two good quarterbacks. Tony Romo's got a rating of 97.3. That's fourth best in the league. Romo's thrown 22 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. Eli Manning's quarterback rating, 6th overall. He's got 23 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. The difference in this game could be on the ground, where Dallas has been inconsistent in stopping the run, and the Giants last week averaged 5 yards a carry against the Packers. Weather's not going to be a problem, since this one's in a dome outside Dallas Sunday night. By the way, the Cowboys have lost 5 straight Sunday night games. In Dallas, Russell Scott for Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Wayne, I think the bottom line on this game, and we all know how huge it is, and they will play again in a few weeks, is the New York Giants have been much more impressive at 6-6 than the Dallas Cowboys have been at 7-5. The problem I have with the Giants is that our offensive line is just devastated by injuries now. They still haven't gotten completely healthy in the secondary at linebacker, and I just don't know if there's enough healthy bodies for them to go into Dallas and be able to play with the Cowboys.
Giants and Cowboys in an NFC East battle in Dallas, our headliner this week in the NFL. Time for the Handicapper's Corner, featuring our expert handicapper from the Phoenician in Las Vegas, Chuck Esposito.
Chuck, it's great to have you with us again, and I don't want it to become my weekly question, but I'm looking at Baltimore and Indianapolis. It's in Baltimore, 16.5. I mean, we're going back to the early days of the Super Bowl where we get these numbers in the high teens, and I don't know if the Patriots just laid down last week or if the Colts finally decided they were going to play in the fourth quarter.
I don't know either. I know we talked about it, Hub, and, you know, they were up by, 31-7. They gave up 3 touchdowns late in that game to change the outcome as far as betting goes. But you look at Baltimore, how well they've played at home. It's tough not to make them that big of a favorite. The public is still going to back the Ravens, and they're not going to play the Colts. So we're not saying they're going to win by that. We're just looking for the ever equalizer that we think will draw a good two-way action.
Well, and that leads me right into the next game I wanted to talk about, because I do understand that's your job, is get up a good number, and hopefully if they move as little as possible, you know you had a good number. But I'm looking at Tampa Bay and Jacksonville, and I'm asking myself, you know, the Bucs may or may not be playing for their head coach's job. The Jaguars may or may not be playing for their interim coach, but Jacksonville's probably played a little better football last couple weeks. They're at home, and yet they're going to give the Bucs, or they're going to get a point from the Bucs.
You know, that game is a tough one to handicap because, as you said, we don't know which teams are going to show, how they're going to play. My guess is we'll probably have the smallest handle out of any of the games on the board on that game. I think you have to make Tampa a small favorite. You look at the way Jacksonville played on Monday night. They just got blown out for 2.5 quarters there. A lot of question marks with those young players. They're playing on defense. I know the Bucs have lost 6 in a row, the most losses outside of the Colts in the league consecutively, but I still think they should be a small favorite.
All right, Chuck, thanks much. We'll look forward to getting you again next week.
All right, thanks, guys. Enjoy the game.
Chuck Esposito out of the Phoenician in Las Vegas. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is coming up next. The Publisher's Pen, with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
You know, Wayne, you and I have been doing this a long time, and forgive me for dating you. I don't mind dating me, but we've seen a lot of players come and go and a lot of great ones. And it never ceases to amaze me that guys who've accomplished so much that the last thing they should worry about are their egos can't get out of the way of their own egos. And I'm talking about what's happened in the last couple days in Indianapolis. Again, according to my sources, there's no question that what the Colts want to do is bring back Peyton Manning and draft Andrew Luck. And I ask myself, with all that he's accomplished, why would Peyton Manning care? What could the issue be? He's going to get his $28 million next year, and if they don't want him in Indy the year after, somebody else is going to pay him $20 million. And yet in the end, it was his ego that caused him to speak up late in the week and said, well, nobody's discussed it with me. Well, you know what, Peyton? Get used to the real world. My boss doesn't talk to me before he hires and fires people either.
Thanks, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Saints and Cardinals radio networks. The coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.